So we continue this evening in Chapter 26 of The Life Divine, The Ascent Towards Supermind. So Sri Aurobindo, when we closed our book last time, was describing why it is not possible all at once for us to leap straight into the supramental consciousness, that there has first to be a psychic and spiritual preparation, even a transformation of the being, an opening up from within of the various parts of us, and a wide self-giving to the Supreme, an offering of the mind and all that it possesses, an offering of the heart and the vitality, all that has force and application there, and even the instincts, the very physicality, the flesh of the body, must be part of that offering. And coming into wakefulness in us, increasingly, the subconscious, so that it is not obscure to our vision any longer, and even a tickling into wakefulness of the inconscient. All of these things have, in a sense, to be rising into this awareness of a yogic being who is then capable of ascending farther into the supramental reaches above and bringing the force down from there. So it's an enormous undertaking that he's described. And he continues his argument now. A unification of the entire being by a breaking down of the wall between the inner and outer nature, a shifting of the position and centration of the consciousness from the outer to the inner self, a firm foundation on this new basis, a habitual action from this inner self and its will and vision, and an opening up of the individual into the cosmic consciousness is another necessary condition for the supramental change. So, the unification that he described in the previous chapter, an awareness of the soul, an opening to the higher consciousness, being one with the cosmos, this is the appropriate groundwork upon which the supramental change can be built. Until these things are in place, it is a bit rash to be inviting the supramental into the awaiting nature. He continues, it would be chimerical to hope that the Supreme Truth Consciousness can establish itself in the narrow formulation of our surface mind and heart and life, however turned towards spirituality. All the inner centers must have burst open and released into action their capacities. The psychic entity must be unveiled and in control. The inner centers here, a reference to the chakras, which must, in a sense, from having their petals closed and lying down, must lift up like flowers answering to the sun and open themselves, burst open, so that all the studded regions of our being have come alive and work in unison in some kind of harmony, which then invites the descent from above. The psychic, the soul from within, must be discovered, not simply experienced from time to time, but discovered and discovered, uncovered, and brought forward, active in the nature. If this first change, establishing the being in the inner and larger, a yogic in place of an ordinary consciousness, has not been done, the greater transmutation is impossible. Moreover, the individual must have sufficiently universalized himself. He must have recast his individual mind in the boundlessness of a cosmic mentality, enlarged and vivified his individual life into the immediate sense and direct experience of the dynamic motion of the universal life, opened up the communications of his body with the forces of universal nature before he can be capable of a change which transcends the present cosmic formulation and lifts him beyond the lower hemisphere of universality into a consciousness belonging to its spiritual upper hemisphere. So, individual, known, embracing the cosmos, known, opening up the various aspects of mind, life, and body to the larger cosmic life and have them sweeping through without knocking us off our plate, our entire being, so that we can be capable of this transcendence. Besides, he must have already become aware of what is now to him superconscient. He must be already a being conscious of the higher spiritual light, power, knowledge, ananda, penetrated by its descending influences, new made by a spiritual change. That means we're already conversant with the superconscient worlds. All the ranges of the higher mind, illumined mind, intuition, overmind, all which will be described again by Sri Aurobindo shortly. Leading up to the supramental, which itself expresses the infinite consciousness of Satchit-Ananda, and we must not only be aware of them, capable of visiting those regions, but capable of receiving into us some sort of descending influence. Must be aware of it then, yes? So when a descent comes, we notice it. We widen for it. We receive it. And therefore, in some sense, already we're being new made. He continues, it is possible for the spiritual opening to take place and its action to proceed before the psychic is far advanced or complete. For the spiritual influence from above can awaken, assist, and complete the psychic transmutation. All that is necessary is that there should be a sufficient stress of the psychic entity for the spiritual higher overture to take place. This does occur. Not every aspiring yogin awakens first the psyche and then proceeds to the spiritual, with the case of Sri T.B. Kapali Shastriya, for instance. There was already, in a sense, a full siddhi in the tantric way of recognition of the wide self which is everywhere, a realization of that spiritual consciousness, and then being invited into the deeper reaches of the integral yoga, felt that this was the call for him and brought the influence of that higher consciousness to bear to disclose the closed up hidden parts of the inner nature which had heretofore not been addressed fully, and he brought the psyche forward. To stand in unification with that higher consciousness, so both the spiritual and the psychic were present in Kapali Shastriya as realization. So this can happen. Sri Aurobindo notes it here. And it was to become so in the person of Kapali Shastriya just a few years after Sri Aurobindo writes this. There has to be a preliminary stage of seeking and effort with a central offering or self-giving of the heart and soul and mind to the highest, and a later mediate stage of total conscious reliance on its greater power, aiding the personal endeavor. That integral reliance again must grow into a final, complete abandonment of oneself in every part and every movement to the working of the higher truth in the nature. The totality of this abandonment can only come if the psychic change has been complete or the spiritual transformation has reached a very high state of achievement. For it implies a giving up by the mind of all its molds, ideas, mental formations, of all opinion, of all its habits of intellectual observation and judgment, to be replaced first by an intuitive and then by an overmind or supramental functioning, which inaugurates the action of a direct truth consciousness, truth sight, truth discernment, a new consciousness which is in all its ways quite foreign to our mind's present nature. Pardon me, I have skipped back a page. As wonderful as this is, I'm reading material that we covered last time. Yes, I was speaking about Kapali Shastriya. I will continue on page 966 in CWSA version. Again, pleading for your leniency. But the third, the supramental change, does not admit of any premature descent of the highest light, for it can only commence when the supramental force begins to act directly, and this it does not do if the nature is not ready. For there is too great a disparity between the power of the supreme force and the capacity of the ordinary nature. The inferior nature would either be unable to bear or bearing, unable to respond and receive, or receiving, unable to assimilate. Till nature is ready, the supramental force has to act indirectly. It puts the intermediary powers of overmind or intuition in front, or it works through a modification of itself to which the already half-transformed being can be wholly or partially responsive. This is cognate with the portion that we just broke off from. The spiritual evolution obeys the logic of a successive unfolding. It can take a new decisive main step only when the previous main step has been sufficiently conquered. Even if certain minor stages can be swallowed up or leaped over by a rapid and brusque ascension, the consciousness has to turn back to assure itself that the ground passed over is securely annexed to the new condition. It is true that the conquest of the spirit supposes the execution in one life or a few lives of a process that in the ordinary course of nature would involve a slow and uncertain procedure of centuries or even of millenniums. But this is a question of the speed with which the steps are traversed. A greater or concentrated speed does not eliminate the steps themselves or the necessity of their successive surmounting. The increased rapidity is possible only because the conscious participation of the inner being is there, and the power of the supernature is already at work in the half-transformed lower nature, so that the steps which would otherwise have had to be taken tentatively in the night of inconscience or ignorance can now be taken in an increasing light and power of knowledge. The first obscure material movement of the evolutionary force is marked by an aeonic graduality. The movement of life progress proceeds slowly, but still with a quicker step, it is concentrated into the figure of millenniums. Mind can still further compress the tardy leisureliness of time and make long paces of the centuries. But when the conscious spirit intervenes, a supremely concentrated pace of evolutionary swiftness becomes possible. Still, an involved rapidity of the evolutionary course, swallowing up the stages, can only come in when the power of the conscious spirit has prepared the field and the supramental force has begun to use its direct influence. All nature's transformations do indeed wear the appearance of a miracle, but it is a miracle with a method. Her largest strides are taken over an assured ground. Her swiftest leaps are from a base that gives security and certainty to the evolutionary saltus. A secret all wisdom governs everything in her, even the steps and processes that seem to be most unaccountable. So he's saying here that the method of evolution, that the reaching in, the discovery, the calling from above, the nexus in which the descending and the ascending force meet, all of these things are replicated each time. And when we get to the supramental, it's not that evolution is suddenly going to throw the process aside. Nature is using this as a means here as well. It was slow in the material. It was quicker in the appearance of life, still quicker in the appearance of mind, and will be gladdeningly quick with the supramental. But all the stages will still be there. And all of the preparation that he's alluded to first has to be complete. Saltus, by the way, is simply a Latin word for leap, like a breach of continuity, a leap from one phase to another. This law of nature's procedure brings in the necessity of a gradation in the last transitional process, a climbing of degrees, an unfolding of higher and higher states that lead us from the spiritualized mind to supermind, a steep passage that could not be accomplished otherwise. So we're not going to leap 20 feet into the air. Rather, we're going to climb a ladder and then make a leap. And the ladder is, of course, the higher ranges of the mental awareness, aware of the spirit, but still within the belt of the mind. There are above us, we have seen, successive states, levels or graded powers of being overtopping our normal mind, hidden in our own superconscient parts, higher ranges of mind, degrees of spiritual consciousness and experience. Without them, there would be no links, no helpful intervening spaces to make the immense ascension possible. It is indeed from these higher sources that the secret spiritual power acts upon the being and by its pressure brings about the psychic transformation or the spiritual change. But in the early stages of our growth, this action is not apparent. It remains occult and unseizable. And again, occult here means hidden. We just can't see it. But always there is this ready influence from above, or you could say readying influence from above, that's shaping things as they occur below in our nature. We don't always feel in our inner nature the hand that guides, that manipulates, that forms and shapes, but it is there. Acting through what range of consciousness is near and akin to us? At first, what is necessary is that the pure touch of the spiritual force must intervene in mental nature. That awakening pressure must stamp itself upon mind and heart and life and give them their upward orientation. A subtle light or a great transmuting power must purify, refine, and uplift their motions and suffuse them with a higher consciousness that does not belong to their own normal capacity and character. This can be done from within by an invisible action through the psychic entity and the psychic personality. A consciously felt descent from above is not indispensable. The presence of the Spirit is there in every living being, on every level, in all things. And because it is there, the experience of Satchit Ananda, of the pure spiritual existence and consciousness, of the delight of a divine presence, closeness, contact, can be acquired through the mind or the heart or the life sense or even through the physical consciousness. If the inner doors are flung sufficiently open, the light from the sanctuary can suffuse the nearest and the farthest chambers of the outer being. So he describes here a going within, an inner movement, an awareness breaking through the crust to the inner being, releasing to our experience the felicitous presence of Satchit Ananda. It is never far, it is always here. The necessary turn or change can also be brought about by an occult descent of the spiritual force from above, in which the influx, the influence, the spiritual consequence is felt, but the higher source is unknown and the actual feeling of a descent is not there. So first, going within can disclose, and the descent from above can reveal. A consciousness so touched may be so much uplifted that the being turns to an immediate union with the self or with the divine by departure from the evolution. And if that is sanctioned, no question of graduality or steps or method intervenes. The rupture with nature can be decisive. For the law of departure, once it is made possible, is not or need not be the same as the law of the evolutionary transformation and perfection. It is or can be a leap, a breaking out of bonds, rapid or immediate. The spiritual evasion is secured, and its only remaining sanction is the destined fall of the body. But if the transformation of earth life is intended, the first touch of spiritualization must be followed by an awakening to the higher sources and energies, a seeking for them, and an enlargement and heightening of the being into their characteristic status, and a conversion of the consciousness to their greater law and dynamic nature. This change must go step by step till the stair of the ascension is transcended, and there is an emergence to those greatest wide-open spaces of which the Veda speaks, the native spaces of a consciousness which is supremely luminous and infinite. And so he leads us back to the opening of the chapter where he cites all from the Rig Veda, a number of citations explaining, extolling these brilliances. So yes, one can make a giant leap out of nature if one feels called and overleap all possibility of working things out on earth to arrive at that liberated status. No question, one can do that. But if the work is to transform life on earth, to complete the evolutionary curve, to reveal the divine which is embedded within this very present world, then one has to do the grades. One has to work these things out a little at a time, however long it takes. It's sedulous, unceasing work that is required of the yogin in doing that. But the riches are enormous because it means the deliverance of a new world and of all hidden divinity coming forth and standing active and vibrant in the nature. So he continues, for here there is the same process of evolution as in the rest of the movement of nature. There is a heightening and widening of the consciousness, an ascent to a new level and a taking up of the lower levels, an assumption and new integration of the existence by a superior power of being which imposes its own way of action and its character and force of substance energy on as much as it can reach of the previously evolved parts of nature. The demand for integration becomes at this highest stage of nature's workings a point of cardinal importance. In the lower grades of the ascension, the new assumption, the integration into a higher principle of consciousness, remains incomplete. The mind cannot wholly mentalize life and matter. There are considerable parts of the life being and the body which remain in the realm of the submental and the subconscient or inconscient. This is one serious obstacle to the mind's endeavor towards the perfection of the nature. For the continued share of the submental, the subconscient, and inconscient in the government of the activities, by bringing in another law than that of the mental being, enables the conscious vital and the physical consciousness also to reject the law laid upon them by the mind and to follow their own impulses and instincts in defiance of the mental reason and the rational will of the developed intelligence. This makes it difficult for the mind to go beyond itself, to exceed its own level and spiritualize the nature, for what it cannot even make fully conscious, cannot securely mentalize and rationalize, it cannot spiritualize, since spiritualization is a greater and more difficult integration. So if mind cannot convince vital and body to come along, then how in the world can it complete the challenge to integrate? It cannot. It can influence, but it cannot, in a sense, be sovereign. It can suggest, but its pleas of reason are often slapped aside. The spiritual consciousness... No doubt, by calling in the spiritual force, it can establish an influence and a preliminary change in some parts of the nature, especially in the thinking mind itself and in the heart, which is nearest to its own province. But this change is not often a total perfection, even within limits, and what it does achieve is rare and difficult. The spiritual consciousness using the mind is employing an inferior means, and even though it brings in a divine light into the mind, a divine purity, passion, ardor into the heart, or imposes a spiritual law upon the life, this new consciousness has to work within restrictions. For the most part, it can only regulate or check the lower action of the life and rigorously control the body. But these members, even if refined or mastered, do not receive their spiritual fulfillment or undergo a perfection and transformation. For that, it is necessary to bring in a higher dynamic principle, which is native to the spiritual consciousness, and by which, therefore, it can act in its own law and completer natural light and power, and impose them upon the members. But even this intervention of a new dynamic principle And this powerful imposition may take long to succeed. For the lower parts of the being have their own rights, and if they are to be truly transformed, they must be made to consent to their own transformation. This is difficult to bring about, because the natural propensity of each part of us is to prefer its own self-law, its dharma, however inferior, to a superior law or dharma which it feels to be not its own. It clings to its own consciousness or unconsciousness, its own impulsions and reactions, its own dynamization of being, its own way of the delight of existence. And this, yes, is an ironic citation or toss towards the Gita. More of that another time. It clings to them all the more obstinately, if that way be a contradiction of delight, a way of darkness and sorrow and pain and suffering. For that too has acquired its own perverse and opposite taste, rasa, its pleasure of darkness and sorrow, its sadistic or masochistic interest in pain and suffering. Even if this part of our being seeks better things, it is often obliged to follow the worse because they are its own, natural to its energy, natural to its substance. And this thing, this sentence here, this part of our being seeks better things, often obliged to follow the worse. This is a translation, as it were, of Horace from the Latin into English, where he says, I see the better way and approve of it, I follow the worse. A complete and radical change can only be brought about by bringing in persistently the spiritual light and intimate experience of the spiritual truth, power, bliss, into the recalcitrant elements until they too recognize that their own way of fulfillment lies there, that they are themselves a diminished power of the spirit and can recover by this new way of being their own truth and integral nature. This illumination is constantly opposed by the forces of the lower nature and still more by the adverse forces that live and reign by the world's imperfections and have laid down their formidable foundation on the black rock of the inconscience. But let's back up for a second to this phrase, until they too recognize that their own way of fulfillment lies there. This implies a deep conversation within us of the more illumined parts of the nature, the psyche influencing subliminal mind, life, and body, reaching into the outer facets of those elements of our nature, etc., listening to them, engaging in a colloquy. And this, of course, is symbolized in the early years of what you'd call transpersonal psychology in the theories and the practice of Roberto Assagioli, whose grand book is, of course, Psychosynthesis. But he has this similar insight that one has to open the nature in this way and arrive at a harmony of the being from within. Sri Aurobindo says the same. Sri Aurobindo, of course, constellates this within a universal picture which was beyond the grasp of Assagioli, but nevertheless, it's always encouraging when some aspect of a modern science finds an insight that fits well with our theory of an integral life that Sri Aurobindo proposes. An indispensable step towards overcoming this difficulty is the opening up of the inner being and its centers of action. For there, the task that the surface mind could not achieve begins to be more possible. The inner mind the inner life consciousness and life mind, the subtle physical consciousness and its subtle physical mentality, once liberated into action, create a larger, finer, greater mediating awareness, able to communicate with the universal and with what is above them, able also to bring to bear their power on the whole range of the being, on the submental, on the subconscient mind, on the subconscient life, even on the subconscious of the body. They can, though not wholly enlighten, yet to some extent open, penetrate, work upon the fundamental in conscience. The spiritual light, power, knowledge, delight from above can then descend beyond the mind and heart, which are always the easiest to reach and illumine, occupying the whole nature from top to bottom. They can pervade more fully the life and the body, and by a still profounder impact, shake the foundations of the inconscience. So, light, power, knowledge, delight. They arrive in that order, Sri Aurobindo is suggesting. But even this larger mentalization and vitalization from within is still an inferior illumination. It can lessen, but it does not get rid of the ignorance. It assails and compels to recede, but it does not overcome the powers and forces that maintain the subtle and secret rule of the inconscience. The spiritual forces acting through this larger mentalization and vitalization can bring in a higher light, strength, and joy. But the full spiritualization, the completest new integration of consciousness, is at this stage still impossible. If the inmost being, the psychic, takes charge, then indeed a deeper mutation, not mental, can make the descent of spiritual force more effective, for the totality of the conscious being will have undergone a preliminary soul change, which emancipates mind, life, and body from the snare of their own imperfections and impurities. At this point, a greater spiritual dynamization, the working of the higher powers of the spiritual mind and overmind, can fully intervene. They may indeed have started their work before, though only as influences, but under the new conditions, they can uplift the central being towards their own level and commence the last new integration of the nature. So he begins the paragraph by suggesting what we might achieve by bringing forward, by evoking the inner and subliminal being to act and prepare the nature for change. But more can be done if the psychic rises from behind and imposes through the subliminal its own powers, and then a greater impact is recorded. And then one might be able to invite, through that, the descent of a higher spiritual consciousness, and the descent of its power can still better prepare and lift the central being. So this would be not the central being that Sri Aurobindo talked about many, many chapters ago, but the active dynamic central being. That means to say where you really are in your development. For some, it may be in the psyche. For some, it may be in the inner mind, etc. Wherever your centration is, gets lifted in this process. Of course, he's talking here about an awakened subliminal, an awakening psychic being, the descent of a higher consciousness. So this is already a transformed, a relatively transformed yogin that has been shaped here. And this central nature is rising. Huh. center of gravity, you see, has come up. These higher powers work already in the human unspiritualized mind, but indirectly and in a fragmentary and diminished action. They are changed into substance and power of mind before they can work. And that substance and power are illumined and intensified in their vibrations, exalted and ecstasized in some of their movements by this entry, but not transformed. But when the spiritualization begins, and as its greater results manifest themselves, silence of the mind, the admission of our being into the cosmic consciousness, the nirvana of the little ego in the sense of universal self, the contact with the divine reality, the interventions of the higher dynamis and our openness to them can increase. They can assume a fuller, more direct, more characteristic power of their working. And this progression continues until some complete and mature action of them is possible. It is then that the turning of the spiritual towards the supramental transformation commences, for the heightening of the consciousness to higher and higher planes builds in us the gradation of the ascent to supermind, that difficult and supreme passage. And we pause there. We have now arrived at the title of the chapter, The Ascent to Supermind. We'll continue next week. For now, though, here's a section from Savitri. And while I'm reluctant to leave the Book of the Divine Mother, we'll come back to Book 1, the Book of Beginnings, Canto 4, The Secret Knowledge. In moments when the inner lamps are lit and the life's cherished guests are left outside, our spirit sits alone and speaks to its gulfs. A wider consciousness opens then its doors, invading from spiritual silences. A ray of the timeless glory stoops a while to commune with our seized illumined clay and leaves its huge white stamp upon our lives. In the oblivious field of mortal mind, revealed to the closed prophet eyes of trance, or in some deep internal solitude, witnessed by a strange immaterial sense, the signals of eternity appear. The truth mind could not know unveils its face. We hear what mortal ears have never heard. We feel what earthly sense has never felt. We love what common hearts repel and dread. Our minds hush to a bright omniscient. A voice calls from the chambers of the soul. We meet the ecstasy of the Godhead's touch in golden privacies of immortal fire. These signs are native to a larger self that lives within us by ourselves unseen. Only sometimes a holier influence comes. A tide of mightier surgings bears our lives, and a diviner presence moves the soul. Or through the earthly covering something breaks, a grace and beauty of spiritual light, the murmuring tongue of a celestial fire. ourself and a high stranger whom we feel. It is and acts unseen, as if it were not. It follows the line of sempiternal birth, yet seems to perish with its mortal frame. Assured of the apocalypse to be, it reckons not the moments and the hours. Great, patient, calm, it sees the centuries pass, awaiting the slow miracle of our change. In the sure, deliberate process of world force and the long march of all revealing time. It is the origin and the master clue, a silence overhead, an inner voice, a living image seated in the heart, an unwalled wideness and a fathomless point. The truth of all these cryptic shows in space, the real towards which our strivings move, the secret, grandiose meaning of our lives. A treasure of honey in the combs of God, a splendor burning in a tenebrous cloak, it is our glory of the flame of God, our golden fountain of the world's delight, an immortality cowled in the cape of death, the shape of our unborn divinity. It guards for us our fate in depths within, where sleeps the eternal seed of transient things. Always we bear in us a magic key, concealed in life's hermetic envelope. A burning witness in the sanctuary regards through time and the blind walls of form. A timeless light is in his hidden eyes. He sees the secret things no words can speak, and knows the goal of the unconscious world and the heart of the mystery of the journeying years. Thank you so much for your patience this evening. Jai Ma. Namaste.